everything I learned in therapy indicates you shouldn't do what happens in your vivid real-world hallucinations.
It worked for Godai.
That's not a basis for good mental health.
Producer's note. Due to a combination of factors, we are releasing our first Patreon bonus episode as a special episode this week. This was originally recorded in September. We've grown a lot in the time. I've done my best to bring this as close to our modern standards as I can.
Hello and welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer Jed.
And welcome to the very first Patreon special episode of the Commentary Track.
Now, we're here to watch Kamen Rider Gotcha. Is that what I understand?
Close. Gotchard. So this is, of course, the newest season of Kamen Rider. This will be your first dip into modern.
Oh my god, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see what modern Kamen Rider looks like.
I cannot wait. I've been chomping at the bit to see this series. What do you know about Gotchard?
Absolutely nothing. This is a blank slate for me. You guys have told me that this is the newest series that's coming out, and my experience is limited to Kuga. I have been interested in pursuing other Kamen Rider media, but have purposefully held off so I can go into this with a blank slate as possible. I understand there's like some almost Pokemon elements to this one.
The only thing I know is that the themes seem to be alchemy and trading cards.
Okay.
And that the first armor he has is apparently a combination of a grasshopper and a steam engine. And that on its own is enough for me.
Yeah, that sounds intimidating. That's the basis of a whole franchise there itself. So we've got, you know, motorcycles and Yu-Gi-Oh! Let's get after it.
Isn't that what 5Gs?
Producer's note, 5Ds, but close.
There's the one where they had to play Duel Monsters on motorcycles.
You know what? I want to watch that now.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go watch the very first episode of the new season, Kamen Rider Gotchard.
Gotcha Hopper 1, Episode 1 of Kamen Rider Gotchard, first aired on September 3, 2023. It was written by Hasegawa Keiichi and Ukita Hiroki and directed by Tasaki Ryuta. A fun fact about Gotchard in relation to our main coverage is that the action director, Fukuzawa Hirofumi, was the suit actor for several Grangi and Kuga. A jump to the sky turns to a Rider review.
And we're back, and oh man, this was a lot.
That was absurdity.
This is incredible.
I didn't know what to expect moving into modern Kamen Rider, but that was beyond all expectations.
In a good or bad way?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was giving me Digimon. It was giving me, like, I got Spy Kids vibes from, like, all the flasks in the countryside and, like, the alternate realm and everything. What an interesting show, but so much more dynamic. I mean, we're watching through Kuga right now, and for Kuga, a lot of our critiques have been that the costumes have been a little uninspired, maybe just some drab color tones, and this is just over the top in every direction.
To go from, yeah, all of the monsters are brown to that much, and I know we'll get to it more, but green and purple and silver.
Yeah, that Egyptian lady just absorbed a scyther and became a giant scythe monster and fought a man that's a train cricket.
Yeah. How about we take it from the top?
Let's do.
So we start off outside of, looks like, some sort of
abandoned warehouse,
but school building, who knows? And there is a man who comes running and clutching a switch.
Yep.
This is Kudo Fuga, played by Ishimaru Kanji, who shared common ground with Katsurayama Shingo, Ichijo from Kuga, in Hokuoki.
He know Ichijo. That's cool.
Right off the bat here. So yeah, he's covering, it's not a switch, it's orange. Presumably this is the driver. It is. And he is being chased by three women is generous? Like, one's very clearly a small child.
Yeah.
These are the Dark Sisters Atropos, Clotho, and Lachesis, named after the Greek Moirai. Atropos, the oldest sister, is played by 9-year-old Okita Itono. Clotho, the middle sister, is portrayed by Mia Harukainen. Lachesis, the youngest sister, is played by Sakamaki Alyssa. Miyahara has also played Takari Nozomi in Kamen Rider Amazons, as well as appearing in Ryu Soulger special chapter Memory of Soulmates.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that was super interesting to me. Our three villainesses are named after the Greek fates. They've got a very, like, Egyptian aesthetic to their clothing and attire. I play 40K a lot, and, like, there was a large mech named after each one, so I remember specifically, like, Atropos was the thread cutter. So, like, these are meant to be old beings. These are meant to be, you know, serious threats.
Yeah, there's so much symbolism packed into just their names. There's even more to their attire, which I do want to take a moment and discuss Clotho and Lachesis's veils. They have these weird, like, cat eye and mouth. They look like the old iron-on decals that you could put on attached to the veil. And we see that they will do a thing.
Dude, I don't even know where to start talking about this episode because so much happened in such a compressed amount of time and so much of the aesthetics tie into everything. This was crazy.
So Atropo pulls out a diamond and blows on it and fire shoots out.
Mm-hmm, which explodes some windows. The windows, the glass shatters, immediately turns into arrows.
And then Lachesis flicks her sword and the arrows light on fire and rain down on him. Atropo says that this driver is the key to the door of darkness. What that means, we have no idea. And Fuga says, no, this is the key to hope. And some Kimmy cards appear behind him, and he calls out, there's a wrestler and a swarm of ants, that the ants then form a chain, and the wrestler swings it around.
There's a cactus in the background throwing spikes at everybody in every direction.
There's a skateboard. There is so much going on.
Did you miss the samurai on the skateboard?
Nope. Nope, caught it.
No, it's just trying to make sure that we bring up all of this. Also, Fuga has a sword all of a sudden and starts swinging it around as well.
Sure does.
They get into a bit of a back and forth and decision. Finally, Fuga summons a steamliner.
He does as we all do when we're in a panic situation and summons a train to escape upon.
And he jumps on it and he escapes. The train pulls into
the Spy Kids.
The Ouroboros realm.
Yes, it looks like Spy Kids, but this is called the Ouroboros realm.
We can see a giant snake in the sky eating its own tail.
We pull into the train station. This looks like, yeah, Spy Kids does the Old West. There's a saloon. They're at a train station.
Erlenmeyer flasks hanging above head.
What they're hanging on, who knows?
Hundreds of them.
Yes, it's kind of beautiful in a way.
It's a liminal space.
And we get all of these cards showing up, and he looks at two of them, Hopper and Steamliner, and tells the two of them to go find someone. And they vanish.
Yeah, this seems to be a realm outside of, like, our reality, like a pocket dimension that this guy is just sustaining.
And from there, we cut to a restaurant, and we get our main character.
Our hero Ichi Nose Hotaru is played by Motojima Junsei.
And he is working on cooking. We find out that this is his family's restaurant. His mom runs it. And some diner is like, oh, are you doing freestyle bentos again? And he makes a comment about he's trying to do something that makes you say, gotcha.
Which we'll find out is a recurring theme for him. That's his
trope. Seems to be a catchphrase.
Yeah.
The food that he makes looks really good.
According to his face after he eats it, it is the opposite.
Yes, it apparently looks way better than it tastes.
Mm-hmm.
But his mom?
Hotaro's mom, Tomami, is played by Minamino Yoko. Minamino shares the common ground of Oikaktai no and Gakumanjima with Sugata-shun, Kamen Rider ZX. Gakumanjima also featured Ushio Kenji from the OG Kamen Rider. She starred alongside Murakami Hiroaki, Sky Rider, in I Have a Fever, Takeda Shingen, and Shibuya Story. Suke Bandeka Season 2 alongside Maya Uchi Hiroshi, Kamen Rider V3. She teamed up with Shimada Yoko from the original Kamen Rider in Shinkuin The Mystery of Toshideji Temple 1200 Years, as well as another OG Kamen Rider alum Koyama Rikiya in Hit the Blue Sky.
She has done a lot.
Yeah.
She was also in Shinsengumi Hajikata Toshizo Seigo no Ichinichi with Kamen Rider Kuga, Oda Giri Joe.
Good lord, there's like three Kamen Rider properties she hasn't been a part of. Wow, what, like, quite the resume.
She quickly tells him that, hey, you're going to be late for school. And he runs out and says that he will help with the restaurant when he gets back home, which, yeah, when your family owns a restaurant, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we get to the school, Furasu High School. And as he is running to try and get to class, he is stopped by a teacher.
Mr. Minato.
Mr. Minato is played by Kumaki Rikudo.
And Mr. Minato talks about, hey, you left your ideal career blank on this form.
Well, yeah, Jared, that's because he's waiting for his gotcha moment.
Yeah, and he says, well, I have a dream, and my goodness, he is Kota Yusuke. He is an amateur.
Intellectual successor of Goda Yusuke.
He doesn't say it, but he is a dream chaser.
I'm looking for a career that'll let me chase my dreams. He'll get there. He'll get there. He's just got to put the words together.
Everything ties back to Kuga. But he is looking for something that's going to make him say, gotcha. And Minato's like, yes, I know. I've heard your gotcha spiel before. You need to come up with something.
I love that every character we've encountered so far that readily has conversations with this guy is done with his shit already. We have met him. His mom's like, good God, just make regular food. The teacher's like, can you please take your career seriously? And then we run into our next character.
This is Rinkudo, portrayed by Matsumoto Reo.
Now, this is interesting because her last name is Kudo. And despite the fact that he is not named in the first episode, Fuga's last name is Kudo.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be some connection there.
Yep, and Ichinose runs straight into her and just
falls back.
Bounces off. She's like a brick wall.
And the camera chooses to linger on a ring that she is wearing.
Probably won't be relevant.
No, can't be. But Mr. Minato's like, hey, you also left your career blank on the form. Renee says, well, yeah, do I really have to turn that in? And walks away. And Hotaru looks back and says, wait, she doesn't know what she's doing either, as if to be like a fellow dream chaser?
Something in common?
Mr. Minato goes, no, her career's already been chosen for her. Ancient family tradition.
Which?
And Hotaru seems shocked by this, like, in this day and age? Family tradition? What? So now we're in class, and we happen to see that Renee and Hotaru are both kind of daydreaming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the teacher calls on Hotaru and is like, hey, what's the Renaissance? Hotaru says, a professional dream chaser.
Bitch, are you dumb?
Yes. Can confirm.
And everyone laughs. The teacher's like, all right, Rene, you're also daydreaming. What's the Renaissance? And she gives
the perfect textbook answer.
Except for her mentioning of alchemy. And the teacher cuts her off.
Alchemy's real, Jared.
Is it? I mean, we saw what that guy was doing. Some of it was alchemy. Some of it seemed to be straight up magic. They're seeming to blur the lines on what alchemy can and can't do.
It's fine. With modern CGI, you can make anything be anything.
But we have... This was filmed decades after Full Metal Alchemist. Like, we have solid rules for what alchemy can and can't do. I do kind of appreciate that they're going their own way, but that's going to be hard to mentally break.
The man eventually summons a cricket and a train, fuses them together to karate kick a scythe lady, and you're worried about the rules of alchemy.
Yes.
Valid, please continue.
Pedantic producers note, Cody keeps saying cricket. It's a grasshopper. They are not the same thing. I looked it up.
Despite having answered the question then being cut off, Renee then decides to take a jab at Hotaru for who knows what reason.
Yeah, shot across the bounds, like you ran into me in the hallway and now I'm gonna punish you in front of the whole class.
It kind of comes across as nagging.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to work.
Emotional damage!
Hotaru feels hurt by the fact that she refers to him as poetry loving, which, what's wrong with that, man? Love poetry. Poetry's great.
It's okay, she'll see. They'll all see.
You got some wild in your eyes as you said that. School ends for the day. Hotaru is desperately trying to put his shoes on to go chase after Renee because she insulted him in front of everyone and he's clearly in love. When he gets stopped by his friend.
This is Kajiki Ryo, played by Kabe Amon.
And Kajiki is talking about a monster that apparently was sneaking up behind him, was making this scree, scree, scree noise.
Again, probably won't come up.
And Hotaru's like, okay, man, I gotta go. So he chases after Renee and finds her standing behind the school looking at utility stairs.
Yeah, it's just a set of utility stairs just up to a brick wall. No door. The stairs just lead to the wall.
And she recites something that's akin to an alchemical formula. Something about those below rising up and those above being pulled down. And as she steps onto the stairs, a whole bunch of junk just moves forward and lifts the stairs up, and a door forms in the wall. And she opens the door and walks through and closes, and everything collapses.
Yep.
Hotaro is, of course, like, what just happened?
But instead of following her through that door...
there's another door.
a random utility door. Just looks like to a security room, or maybe to, like, you know, like the boiler room of something. Just opens on its own, right behind him.
So he does what anyone would do in this instance.
Anyone just, without a shred of survival instinct.
Yep, and he just walks in. And the door closes behind him.
Nothing abnormal here. Everything's fine.
He's walking around, kind of looking, and he starts to hear that screet, screet, screet noise that Ryu mentioned. And he looks, and there's a shadow projected on the wall, and something is moving. And he looks around, and he's getting real scared, and he finally turns and looks, and there's...
anime Jiminy Cricket.
A cute grasshopper thing. And in this moment, it's CG. But this is Hopper 1.
Hopper 1 is voiced by Fukun Masato, and is a reference to Barry from Kamen Rider J, another grasshopper familiar thing.
Familiar, you know, thing.
We then cut to a park. Hopper 1 is sitting there beside him. It is a practical...
yeah, I was so excited to see that. Like,
it's
they actually
physical
made...
prop. Yeah. It's not just CG at all times.
But, oh my God. Okay. So I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but later when it's in its backpack and it's, like, supposed to be peeking out, and it's very clear that somebody just has their hand in the bottom of the backpack just, like, moving the plastic toy up towards the zipper. I love it. I love it so much.
He's offering it the bento that he made and is saying, like, hey, I'm sorry, it's just leftovers. And he's trying to talk to Hopper when Rene shows up, and he immediately stuffs Hopper in the backpack and zips it up.
Mm-hmm.
We're also in the subway, and there's an announcement. It's saying, oh, on this track, there's coming a
steam engine.
Train.
Yeah.
And whoever's making this announcement is confused by this, and Steamliner comes zooming through.
Steamliner's voice actor is Hiyama Nobuyuki.
We see that Ryu is there, and he sees the train zoom by, and he's trying to take a picture of it because he is so confused by this.
It clearly
he refers
takes
to it as a monster.
Yeah, it clearly takes exception to this because it immediately lays fresh track on either side of him and attempts to run him over immediately.
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
So we cut back, and Rene is being like, what's that in your backpack? Nothing.
Don't worry about it.
Mind your business, David!
They have some back and forth, and Hopper all of a sudden just shouts. And he shouts so loud that it can be heard in the subway station. And this is what causes Steamliner to back up. And yes, fresh track lays out. And Steamliner turns and hauls, and Ryu jumps off the track at just the last moment so that he is not killed by this.
This train gives no shits about human lives. It is fully intending to run over basically him, everybody in the park in the way.
We cut back to the park, and Rene and Hotaro are still arguing when they all of a sudden hear the bellows go off, and track comes laying down through this dining segment in the park, and Steamliner comes barreling through, people diving out of the way. Hotaro's like, what is going on? And Rene says something about Kimmy's.
Mm-hmm.
And before he has time to really ask what that means, she takes her ring off of her ring finger, puts it on her index finger, and she's in a new outfit.
Witch. I'm telling you, witch.
Given that there is a ring and she is doing magic and there's a bit of a transformation, this feels like at least inspired by Kamen Rider Wizard. Honestly, Jed, you would know better than I would since you've actually seen that season.
There's a Kamen Rider Wizard.
Yes. We'll get to it eventually.
Continue.
Producer's note, I have in fact not seen Wizard.
So she magics, alchemies, a bunch of leaves to fly into Steamliner.
Rin used razor leaf.
She did.
She did use razor leaf. Maybe magical leaf.
Leaf storm.
How many Pokemon moves can we name for this?
Bro, I'm coming up with a Pokemon move for literally everything anybody does.
It wasn't very effective.
No, it wasn't. She's using it on fire steel type.
Neither was Hotaru's tackle when he used it on Tamami. Just Oh. Or Rene, yeah.
So the leaves go into the smokestack, and Steamliner gets angry for a minute and bellows them back out, only now they're on fire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she, Matrix, stops them, spins them around, and throws them, and this slices the track in half, and Steamliner skids because it no longer has a track to move on.
And is this the first time it runs over our main character?
It was super effective.
That one was.
It was. No. Well, it's on fire, and it's steel type, so,
yeah,
you know.
Certainly. So,
our main character gets run the hell over. Like, I assumed he was dead immediately.
This is the him tackling Renee. The train spins, hits him. Yes, hit seems like he's dead.
Hit! Like, hit! Like, he... Bam!
But no, his backpack just gets stuck on something. And he climbs up on top of it as this is just... It's no longer just laying track on the ground. It's making waves. It's doing hills and valleys.
Saved by the power of Jansport.
And it goes under a bridge. And like you've seen in so many action films, Hotaro's running backwards, trying to not get hit by the bridge. And at the last minute, turns, jumps, and is just hanging there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Renee comes up and is like, who are you? What are you doing? She's like, it's my job as an alchemist to stop the Kimmies when they do this. Why are you getting involved?
Questions we as an audience also share.
Mind your business, David!
And his response is, you were in trouble. I couldn't just run away. I had to help.
Boo.
Steamliner has turned around and is coming back. As Hotaro is trying desperately to hang on for dear life, and right as he lets go and falls, Steamliner jumps, and we're not making this up, eats him.
Yeah, yeah, he gets eaten by a freaking train.
And the train takes off, and Renee is just sort of standing there staring.
Mm-hmm.
We then cut back to the Ouroboros realm, where Steamliner pulls into that train station again. And Hotaro and Hopper One get out. Hotaro kind of looks around, takes in his surroundings. This is the moment where we look up and we see the giant Ouroboros in the sky. And Fuga comes up.
Still looking beat to hell.
Yes. Normally alchemists can heal themselves, but not him.
I'm telling you, man, prestidigitation is it's a cantrip or a level one spell. It's not hard. Bad wizard.
And he's like, Hopper One and Steamliner chose you. We look and we get to see, again, all of the Kimmie cards, and Hopper and Steamliner go back into theirs. And, these cards are alive. He refers to them as Kimmie card souls.
Mm-hmm. Lots of implications there, but we don't have time for that today.
No. He's like, you're going to take this. And as he's starting to explain, like, what any of this is, Atropo, Clotho, and Lachesis enter into the realm.
Their method of teleportation is pretty cool.
Burning into and out of realities? Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome.
So they do a combination attack, and Fuga blocks it momentarily with his sword. His sword melts away pretty quickly, though, and he's just standing there holding this attack back. Well, he says, you're Kamen Rider now. And then he's vaporized.
What is it about the Kamen Rider franchise just putting a shitload of responsibility on completely unprepared individuals? Has there ever been a Kamen Rider where it's like, yes, this is a well-put-together person at the edge of physical fitness and peak mental acuity with a really respectable career and a lot of responsibility, and we're going to put them in charge of humanity? You hesitated. You both hesitated.
Main Rider? No.
Main Negative. Got it.
That's a trait for secondary writers. Maybe Kabuto. Hard to say. We can make that decision when we get to that season.
Producer's note. This really depends on your view of main writers. For example, while Geats is the eponymous writer of his season, Tycoon tends to serve as our point of view character. Although I'm not sure I would consider Star of Stars of Stars a stable career.
After Fuga is vaporized, there is an explosion, and Hotaro's back in the real world, only now he's holding the driver and the two Kimmie cards. And we see balls of light starting to break through reality. These are the Kemi cards. They're scattering everywhere, and we get a scene of utter chaos.
Basically think Digimon, but like that one scene from Ghostbusters where like the capture area gets broken and all the ghosts get released. It's that, but Digimon.
It's that, or like...
The Kemis only say their names. They are Pokemon.
So it's Ghostbusters with Pokemon.
Yeah, I suppose so. I keep thinking because they're cards, it is card captors.
It's Yu-Gi-Oh. Let's be honest.
There's so many influences here.
Yeah, are. I'm trying to narrow this down into something my brain can process, and I'm just not having any luck.
We're seeing them rampaging through the city, and yes, they're all saying their name as if they are their Pokemon. You know, let's take a moment here while we're at it, because we've been discussing Pokemon for a fair amount of this special. You're playing the Scarlet and Violet DLC. What's your favorite Pokemon?
Actually, yeah, I'm curious about that. You want to start with yours?
Sure. Mine, easy. It is Alolan Sandslash.
Ah, the Alolan Slap-Slap.
Yep. Growing up, Sandshrew and Sandslash were my favorite Pokemon. Ice is my favorite type. You, of course, know. Both of you do, but the audience doesn't know. All three of us used to take part in a fantasy competitive Pokemon League.
Yeah, the Pokemon Draft League.
Yeah, and the first season that I took part in, I decided to put the challenge on myself. I was going to be an Ice Gym. And I ended up taking third for that season.
Yeah, you did actually really well for having an overwhelming typing weakness anybody could plan for.
It's my favorite type. Sandshrew, Sandslash are my favorite Pokemon, so when they showed off Alolan Sandslash, and oh my god, it's an ice-type Sandslash, yeah, there's no way it couldn't be my favorite Pokemon. How about you?
Jed, what's yours?
I feel like I'm contractually obligated at this point to say Low Kicks.
Low Kicks?
Because he's based off Kamen Rider.
Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Oh, he is. You know what's funny? I'm actually playing through a Nuzlocke with a friend of mine right now, and the second Pokemon he picked up was a Lokix, and now we have to use it. So we're stuck with the stupid thing. I'm going to go make him rename it Kuga. Mine goes straight back to Gen 1. I think it's still Nidoking. Nidoking's pretty awesome. Like, he bulky, him look like a little Godzilla, he got, like, a cool move set, a cool secondary ability. Like, Nidoking's freaking lit. So, speaking of random creatures.
We're seeing all these Kemis thrash through. There's a lot of focus on the motorcycle for a moment.
The motorcycle is named Gold Dash.
Cool. So, there's a lot of focus on Gold Dash. And then we see someone in black clothes with a red ring, and he's holding a blank Kemi card. But we immediately cut away from that.
He gonna catch him a motocicleta.
We cut back to Hilltop. Renee and Hotaru are discussing, do we need to do something? We can't just let these things run rampant through the city when the three Dark Sisters show up.
Bum, bum, bum.
The Dark Sisters, you have our key to despair. Hotaru says, no, this is, you know, this is mine. And they blast. They end up at the stadium. And Clotho decides she's going to do this by herself. And it just so happens that there is a wild Comantis.
Scyther. You mispronounced Scyther.
Yes, I'm sorry. The Scyther, somehow, in a glitch to the game, already had a nickname.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yep.
And so she puts her veil back down, and with the stupid iron on eye, I can't get over how dumb that looks.
With the power of silly veil emojis.
She grabs the Scyther, pulls it into herself, and turns into Mantis Malgum.
Is that the actual name for what she turns into?
Yes.
Is there a formalized name for the fusion of each thing with a person?
It will probably be something Malgum each time.
That's fair.
I was unable to find the Mantis Malgum suit actor.
Shame.
Interesting.
But this thing's pretty cool, pretty creepy, and especially after watching Kuga. Oh,
yeah, we just finished an episode of Kuga, and just seeing this in comparison, oh my god.
The Malgum's green and silver and purple and black, and there's a pair of human arms bondaged to the body, and there's now the Mantis arms.
Yeah, like the head with all like the metal straps, and it just complete asymmetricalness of it was so cool.
Costume designs, especially compared to Kuga, have nobody had so much.
Nobody in this episode had a diaper.
That's true.
Not one person. It was remarkable.
Don't get too excited. The monsters all have the silver body with their motif on head and arms.
Okay, but it's still a far cry cooler than what we just had. Like, again, nobody had a diaper. No nappies. Not one.
Maybe it is due to pure comparison, but coming from the monsters in Kuga, this is such a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
Renee has a comment about Kimmies are not supposed to mix with human malice. Hopefully that gets addressed in the future, what exactly she means by that.
Yeah, more on that after the weather.
She means they make amalgams.
Ow. I was hoping there was something more deep than that. And Mantis Malgam goes to attack Hotaro in a very similar way. I got flashbacks to the first episode of 01. It's more of a Mantis style, and especially those sickle beams coming through. It was heavily inspired by that.
Such a great combination of CGI and practical effects. Like, throughout the course of the fight scene, they blended the two, not seamlessly, but well enough that you can suspend disbelief and just enjoy the festival that you're watching.
Yeah. I realized I missed a point, and it's important to bring up right now, because when Fuga was shielding Hotaro from the combined attack of the three sisters, Hotaro gets a flash showing some silhouettes, the driver. It's as if he has been shown how to transform.
Yeah, here's your download. Go fight.
So in this, as the attacks are coming, he announces that he is Kamen Rider, and we get his first henshin. He throws one card in, throws the other, slams them together, and something that we haven't seen yet, we get a stock footage henshin. These are much more common in Super Sentai than they are in Kamen Rider. And we get an Alchemy Lab and Steamliner and Hopper One and Hotaro all going into this flask, and there's some light, and an abomination comes out. This is, in a moment, true alchemy. This is a transmutation of a steam train and a grasshopper. And this poor boy, it's the body like a grasshopper, but it's got the back end of a train. It's got a smokestack. Yep. It's clearly made of metal.
This is called a wild form. It's similar to Revis's remix forms, minus the Hoye. I wasn't a fan of those, but at least that had a dude and his inner demon 69ing to become a Megalodon.
Pardon? All right, I missed something. I can't wait to get to that one.
I haven't seen Revice either.
So I'm curious. Like, this raises a question for me. Like, are we going to get to see other wild forms? Like, is he going to have to achieve specific things by, like, going into other wild forms with other Pokemans?
Med Pirate's wild form appears in the Jeets movie, and Comantis and Odorippus appears in episode 2.
Okay, so yeah, we get some more of them. All right. Well, this is clearly not a very effective combat form.
He tries fighting Mantis Malgam. He gets thrown around a bunch. Some rubble.
Part of a building on.
Yes. And he has another flashback, and he's like, oh, right, the full. Hits the belt again. And this time we get his full henshin, and oh my god, this...
Bro, this costume is a symphony.
Steam Hopper is such a cool bit of armor.
We were just talking about how in Kuga, dragon form just looked like he was wearing like a thin PVA foam over leather pants, and it was just like, God, we could have done so much more with that. Flash forward, this guy's got a screen in his chest that's showing like the animation of like the steam engine, shows fire in his chest, the visor, anime scarf of ass kicking.
Oh, you saying that, means it is time for this week's Tropusatsu.
Ba-dum, ba-dum.
And of course it is scarf of ass kicking. Scarves are badass.
They are.
It could be. Due to Kamen Rider, because the very first Kamen Rider did have a scarf, and the theme is brought back. Scarves will usually be red, yellow, or black. This one's white. I think the original Kamen Rider's was white as well. It was red? Okay. But the white billowing with the steam.
Yeah, kind of giving a smoke motif, like it was the smoke from the steam engine.
There's no breeze going, but the scarf flowing in the background.
Real anime heroes bring their own wind.
Yes. Jared. The scarf of ass kicking usually will get bonus points if it covers part or even all of the face, a la Greninja looks cool mm-hmm. because his tongue is wrapped around like a scarf of ass kicking. This can also be applied to, you know, badass cape or trench coat, because with the exception of Zugamagoo, trench coats are cool. It can also be replaced with a sash or a headband. You know, if you've been watching the anime or even the new live action on One Piece, when Zoro ties the band around his head to show that he's being serious,
yep,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's the moment. It's something, some indicator that is a badass character. Like, they've got a pose, it's blowing in the breeze. There'll be something.
We don't see this a lot in Western media. It's very much a Japanese thing.
In Western media, I think you see capes a lot more than you see scarves. I mean, you got Batman, you got Superman with capes blowing in the breeze. You know, like, that's what you tend to see a lot more in Western media.
Yeah. You know, Will, it's rule of cool, it's badass, of course. You know, we'll ignore how having a piece of loose flowing fabric during a fight does not help you.
Yeah, I'm just hearing Edna's voice in my head, like, no capes.
No scarf. Could be part of the reason why Kamen Rider has not consistently used it, but man, it is so cool to see it again.
You know, it only takes one time for you riding your motorcycle and your scarf to get caught in the back tire and just, you don't really scarf after that.
All of the Showa era riders, with the exception of Black and Black RX, had scarves. We see it off and on through the Heisei era. The one that immediately comes to mind is Double. Is this the first in Reiwa to really have the scarf? I can't think of a... 02 had a nod to it, where part of its armor was made to look like the scarf.
Vice and Jeets, and maybe Tycoon.
Okay. Haven't seen either of those.
So I wonder, does this like call back to the aesthetics of like a ninja? Because you typically, when you see ninjas portrayed, you see like, you know, they've got the headband or something flowing in the breeze. You see them in silhouette with something flowing behind them. Like, that seems to be a fairly common visual theme in like ninja iconography.
Of course, if there's ninjas, the scarf's going to be there.
Oh, God, yes. I spent countless hours in my youth. I don't know if you remember Gaia Online.
I do remember Gaia Online.
Do you know how much time I sunk into that game to get the red anime scarf that you could put on your character?
Too much.
Entirely too much.
My God, I could gush over the way that his actual full Steam Hopper Rider form looks.
It cannot be overstated.
The blue on black, that chest piece, the fact that it looks like goggles lifts up.
Yep.
Ah, it's so good. And they start to fight, and he's kind of snarky while fighting.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I'm not super crazy about, though, is when he pulls out his gun. It kind of just looks like the same sort of orange arrows that make up his eyes.
It looked like he had taken like thing that is the driver and just like attached a handle to it and then fired some indicator arrows at his opponent.
Yeah, he swipes Steamliner through it, shoots some arrows, and then shoots a steam cloud. And they're fighting in darkness for a moment, and he sneaks up behind and... the best part of the fight. He hits his belt, and he goes and does his first rider kick.
Which, given my limited experience with Kuga and the Kiki Pete's rider kicks we've got so far, and the half-assed kicks we've got so far, good God, that was epic.
This is on another level anyways, because he pulls one leg up, goes into a stance, jumps, transforms into his wild form. Is flying towards, and just before making contact, switches back to full rider form. Hits through, hits the ground, skids.
Doesn't even look back at the cool explosion.
Mantis Malcolm explodes. And Commantus, Scyther, comes flying out, and on pure instinct, presumably, he holds up a card, and Mantis goes straight into it.
It is the Monster Mash. The Monster Mash.
Wait,
that for this.
Which? Proceed.
Clotho is angry and working through stuff. Not good for a healthy relationship, but fun for a one-night stand. Mantis Malgam is another bondage fan, if you're a fan of that. Those arms seem dangerous for lovemaking. Also, female mantis tend to eat their mates. I will pass.
Psh, sounds like a great way to opt out for me.
Fair.
I wasn't sure who you were going to target with that Monster Mash. There were a lot of options, and half of them were trains.
I kind of figured it was going to be the Malgam, but I also thought it was going to be just the Malgam.
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
necessarily Clotho. But so, He takes a moment to look at the card, and then the explosion reverses itself. And Clotho seems completely okay.
Psych.
And she gives a snarky one-liner about he hasn't seen anything yet, puts her veil back on, and burns out of reality.
Dude, that is such a cool intro and outro mechanic for them, just searing a hole in reality wherever they go.
Hotaro immediately demorphs. Rene runs up, and he shows off his three Kimmy cards. Hopper 1, Steamliner, Comantis. He kind of refers to them as friends. When, all of a sudden, Ryo comes up, and he has on his phone a picture of Steamliner, and he's like, I found a monster, I... And a red wave of energy comes out, and the image on the screen disappears. And suddenly, Ryo's like, don't know what I'm doing here. Hey, good to see you, friend. Bye.
Yeah, wipes his phone, too.
Wipes his memory.
Yeah.
And as Hotaro and Rene are looking around like, what's happening? A voice calls out, that's one of the rules. Anyone who, you know, experiences a Kimmy has to have their memory wiped if they're not an alchemist.
Very Harry Potter vibes on that one.
And they turn around, and it's Mr. Minato.
Mm-hmm.
Only we see he has a red ring, and he once again switches it from ring to index finger. His clothes turn into that black outfit we saw earlier.
Wizard.
And the episode ends with the three of them, Rene, Hotaro, and Mr. Minato, standing there.
Yep. I'm honestly so glad that they added that part with him just creating an aura of wiping everybody's memories, because otherwise there are so many implications to this universe that nobody's ready to handle. But the fact that, like, just, oh, that happened, magic exists, there are other dimensional beings, alchemy's a thing, and everybody's memories wiped. Cool, that's how society continues. This was incredible.
This was something else.
This series kept up with my ADHD. I could not look away from the screen. I was having a great time.
I had a blast with this. What do we want to pick as our rankings?
Pokeballs.
Sure. So, let's see, for the episode plot. The plot is all over the place. They were working very hard to try and seed an entire season's worth of storylines into this. Mm-hmm. There's so many questions about the Ouroboros realm, the Three Sisters of Darkness. There's a line at the very end that says it's been 120 years since a human and Kimmies have fused together like this. Is he specifically referring to Kamen Rider Gotchard? Does this mean there's been another writer before? Hotaro seemed to kind of imply that he was the first, or at least Fuga kind of made it sound like you'll be the first to do this, but something like this has happened in the past before. What is this door to despair? There is so much that has been seeded that we're going to have to wait a season to see if it pays off. But man, it hooked me.
Yep, immediately.
I'm going to give this a 5. Cinematography, it's practically night and day compared to with what we're currently watching. But, you know, you would expect that with 23 years of advancements in filming. But shots are dynamic. They're getting away with things that they never could have done back in Kuga. I know there's a bit of bias just comparing these two, not looking at this strictly objectively. Like, if we want to really get it down, the CG for Wild Form Steam Hopper is... It's scary. Some of the Kimmies, when they're just roaming free, I think work. Others look kind of bad. The switch for Gold Rush from its CG to its practical was a great thing for it. We're getting such great shots. Yeah, they're spending a lot on budget for CG, and for the most part, it's working. Angles are dynamic. Shots are great. I'm going to give it a 4. Combat. Oh, I loved that fight. We get some great hand-to-hand. The fact that we get to see Rene during the fight join in as well when she turns that rubble into paper planes. The moment in darkness and, oh, God, I cannot state enough just how much I loved that kick. I don't quite feel 5 is appropriate because there certainly is room for improvement, but I'm going to go with a 4.5.
So 5, 4, 4.5, which is 4.5.
Yeah. So that brings my final score to 4.5 Pokeballs. Cody?
So for me, yeah, right off the bat, we already have a lot more dynamic plot points. We have introduced... Kuga was very much the same way. Episode 1 of Kuga gave us a ton to work with. It threw a ton our way, but this feels more fleshed out immediately. A lot of chaos, a lot of anarchy. We had to pick up a lot of pieces along the way. I'm going to give the plot a 4.5 myself. Cinematography, great. Much, much improved. Again, you know, 23 years. Cinematography, like I said when we started watching it, that Kuga's cinematography reminded me a lot of X-Files. This watching through gives me more Doctor Who vibes. Like, the CGI that's there is CGI. They don't try to blur it into the background. They don't try to make it anything other than it is, but it works. And the combination of CGI and practical effects just gives me a lot of those Doctor Who vibes. So I loved it. You're right. The dynamic angles, we had a lot to play with. I'm giving it a solid 4 out of 5. And then combat is straight 5. Right off the rip, right out the gate. That Rider kick was incredible. We had dynamic attacks that were on theme for the users of them, and that was something really cool to see. Looking at it, that also shakes out to 4.5 out of 5 Pokeballs.
Chet?
They were trying to do a lot in 24 minutes, and it doesn't do it well. Having seen the first episode of every Reiwa season so far, this is my least favorite. Objectively, it's fine, but doesn't get me like other series. 3.5 out of 5. Cinematography, great shots, angle. The fight scene has a cool moving camera circling the action. The special effects were strong. And the Orberus realm is really well done. 4 out of 5. Fight, I'm a little lower than you guys. I'm less of a fan of the throwing energy for most of the fights. But the hand-to-hand was good. Rin was involved, which was cool. The Rider kick was awesome. 4. 3.83 repeating is my total.
And that brings us to our highest total so far. That is 4.276 repeating. I think it's safe to say we enjoyed this one.
Absolutely.
Also, bro, with the animation, I don't know what it is, but it's reminding me of Spy Kids. I swear to God. Like, if a Thumb showed up, I would not be surprised.
It would fit right in.
It would. And that's not a bad thing either. Like, they set out to make these creatures seem otherworldly and something that you'd see in a card game, and I think they captured that very well. How about our actual villain this time, though?
Personality. Clotho is angry. That seems to be, as far as this episode goes, her only personality trait. There's not a lot there, and when she turns into the Mantis Amalgam, she's still angry. It's not a lot to work with. One, design. This one's real interesting in that we get her Clotho design, the Egyptian-inspired outfit. It's impractical, but also hints at how ancient they must be to go along with their name. I don't like the veil. It's goofy, but not in like a fun goofy like the Kimmies are. I'm having trouble putting it into proper words, but the veil does not work for me. When she turns into Mantis Amalgam, again, compared to Kuga, it is a breath of fresh air. Looking at it objectively, yes, it is just a human body with its arms bondaged up, and then the entire monster design is the head. But man, what a cool design that head is. It's amazing what they can do with monster suits these days. I love the use of color. I love the multiple arms coming out of the head with the blades. It looks threatening. It looks cool. Of what we have watched as part of this podcast goes, this is my favorite monster design. I've got to give it high marks. This is like a 4.5. Plan. Overarching for all of them seems to be just to get the Gotchard driver. To what purpose? What this door of despair is? Who knows? But that is their one plan. And she tries.
Was she to know she was fighting the main character?
No. And I guess her goal would have been kill Hotaro, take the driver for herself. It's a very basic plan, but also kind of refreshing that the main villain's goal seems to be to take the driver from the writer.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of neat. The uniqueness of it, though, doesn't outweigh that it's a very simple plan and she doesn't really succeed at it at all. Unlike the monsters in Kuga, there's no collateral damage. There's no just civilians dying. It's strictly a one-on-one fight. I guess maybe we could argue that because Fuga got vaporized, then at least one person's dead. Yes, I know, especially who can say if he is in fact dead for sure.
The old wizard man from the spirit realm is not dead because he got lasered. Come on.
All we have so far is this episode to go off of. But I think, man, this feels really weird because I think I've got to do a one for plan as well and to speak so highly of the episode as a whole. And I can't stress enough, I love the design of this monster. But by our own judging criteria, like, I do have to give it low marks for the other stuff. So that brings my score to a 2.16 repeating.
I think I was a little more generous in mine. So for personality, we have, yes, Angie, big Angie pants. But also we got notes of haughty condescension. Like, these are beings that are used to being in control. These are beings that are used to being the most powerful thing in the room, and now they've run into this old wizard man with his card captor stuff and can't seem to get by him, and it's frustrating, and they're angry about it as they chase him between realms. So we don't really have enough to judge by. We'd need to watch more of the series to kind of get a more clear view, so I was a little more generous. I gave it a 2. Design, I'm going with a 4.5. And that's the combined of kind of our three fates and our Scyther fusion here. Because we have design notes that I feel like will underpin the rest of the fusions we see from here on out. And that kind of consistency, I think, will lend itself well. We see that with our writer. We see that with our villain. And I think that's going to come through clear no matter what Kemi they end up fusing with for whatever fight they go to. So with that in mind, I went with a 4.5. I like the integration of the Kemi that they selected and its effect on the overall aesthetic. But they still appear, like you mentioned the veil and the little face on the veil, they appear a little unhinged, and their fusions do too. And that carry through of design philosophy I did enjoy. Plan, I went with the bog standard 3. They clearly have a very distinct goal, and that is to take the driver, and they are trying to do so, and they're using what they have available to do so, and did not expect such heavy pushback, and now they have to, you know, go back to the drawing board. So I went with a 3 on that one. So my total comes out to 3.16 repeating Pokeballs.
We've said so much about the greatness of this design. It's a 5 for me. Probably won't think so highly when and if we revisit this series. The plan is another rampage. Standard first episode monster, but not interesting. 1. The rampaging monster is saved by being one of the big bads. But she is still just angry a lot. More interesting than it could be, but still not inspiring. 3 out of 5. That makes an even 3 for me.
So 3.16, and yours was, what was your total?
Mine was like 2.16.
2.16. Overall, 2.77.
That's interesting, given how much we gush about it, for the score to still end up that low.
Well, so our judgment criteria are a little harsh for intro characters, because we don't have enough time to really flesh out motivations and stuff. The criterion that we go with tend to be more for well-developed characters, and we just strictly don't have enough to go on. As much as we enjoy the character, we don't have enough time or enough depth to really flesh them out.
Fair enough. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we wrap this up?
I wish for more of them.
It's going to be fun watching this in the future.
Join us next week when we actually cover episodes 35 and 36. Tremble and Emotion. You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. For just $5 a month, you can get more bonus episodes like this one, only better. I hope.
Would a figure with your love of Godzilla be like Tyranitar?
Okay,
or something?
Mega Tyranitar is right up there. Listen, if I got a 6-man team, they're both on the squad. Let's be honest. Played a lot of Pokemon Fusions too, Pokemon Infinite Fusions, And I think my favorite fusion I've come across so far was Tyranitar with Torterra. Yeah, it makes like an Ankylosaurus, but like the spines on its back are like trees and roots and stuff. It's really cool.
That does sound really cool.
Rhyperior or Aegislash before this podcast, Nidoking came third or fourth.
Rhyperior and Aegislash are both... Rhyperior, he a barrel with arms and a funny nose.
Yeah, but he's a rhino, and that's Jed's favorite animal.